Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Greg Kelly Podcast. In New York, I'm coming to you. New York, United States of America. Not very united. I'll be talking about that in the next podcast. This is a very critical time we're in. Oh, by the way, I was getting on the train and going down the subway, pretty narrow by subway standards, staircase, and there was a guy with a needle in his arm at the top of the stairs, just sitting there, blocking the way. I had never seen that before, a needle in someone's arm. I've seen it on television, in the movies. I've seen it in the newspaper. I've heard people say they've seen it. I've never seen it with my own eyes. Scruffy guy, you know, poor guy, hadn't had a shower in probably a long time, and sitting there, oblivious to everything that was going on around him, just focused on his arm and his needle. Where did he come from? How did he get to that position? That intrigues me, but it infuriates me that he's there. And this is tolerated. This is all good in New York. This is the New York of when law enforcement has been stigmatized and delegitimized. It's a horrific situation. It's happening all across the country. We'll be talking a lot more about that. In the meantime, have you seen this, I guess, spike in UFO chatter? It's front page news now in the New York Times, UFOs. It used to be something you'd see in the Inquirer or on the Brady Bunch. But UFOs are unidentified flying objects, whatever you want to call them. They're there. They're unexplained. And now the military is acknowledging things that they've been studying UFOs and trying to figure out what's going on here for a long time. The military doesn't know. Who knows? Are these from other worlds? Look, I have no idea. But the guy I talked to is off the charts brilliant. His name is Jeremy Corbell. He has been researching this stuff for decades. He has been on the cutting edge of these discoveries. And he is just a fascinating guy. What he can't do, I don't know. He's a mixed martial arts instructor and a competitor, filmmaker. He is one of these guys who has such a big brain. And what is it like when you got a big brain and you use most of it? I think you've got a life like Jeremy Corbell. You should check out his website. It's called extraordinarybeliefs.com, extraordinarybeliefs.com. So there have been all these things happening. New York Times, 60 Minutes. What are these objects? Maybe you've seen that video, the Navy pilots tracking some unexplained object that's moving very, very fast. Looks like nothing you've ever seen. No exhaust trail. What could this possibly be? These are legitimate questions, and no one has any good answers. Well, he's got some good answers, or at least the right questions. My conversation with Jeremy Corbell. What is happening right now in this moment? There's so much excitement, and a lot seems to be happening. Where are we?
Right. So kind of big picture, where are we? There are craft of unknown origin which fly with impunity within our restricted airspace in the United States, as well as other foreign nations. This has been going on for quite some time. It's highly documented, really well documented, with all sorts of corroborative sensor systems, as well now we have, you know, FLIR pilot footage of some of these unidentifieds. So where does that put us? We're in a position now where representative government is taking notice because of things like witness testimony with Commander David Fravor, Commander Chad Underwood. You know, these are pilots such as yourself, but they've encountered things. And just from a perspective of near miss, this is something that should be handled properly. And now finally, that's what we're seeing. So where we are is finally representative government is protecting and thinking about our servicemen and servicewomen. And it's taking this issue, which is stigmatized and people are demoralized, and they're taking this issue and they're putting it front and center and giving it the attention it should have. That's where we are. That's what you're seeing. That's the temperature of the media. People are just reporting the news now.
Let me talk to you about the most famous, or it's one of them, the F-18 encounter with whatever that thing was.
The Tic Tac UFO by Commander David Fravor and Commander Chad Underwood. And just to be clear before we move on, I broke that story twice before the New York Times with my mentor in journalism, George Knapp. You know, I was on that case for many years. I kept their secret about what was going on. I always told them it would come out, told them it would. And it did. And how Commander Fravor, the F-18 pilot who chased a UFO for the United States military, called the Tic Tac UFO, that showed beyond hypersonic next generation technology. He found out about it because I called him on his phone. I told him, hey, someone spoke about it. It wasn't me. So that is now a very famous case, the Nimitz or Tic Tac UFO case from 2004 off of the west coast of California. It's a warning area off San Diego where they were flying. And Commander Underwood gave me the first ever recorded audio interview, and he laid it out for us. He went through every single electro-optic system that he had available to him with his forward-looking infrared, and he recorded it. So you've got a man that chased a UFO for the United States military. You've got a man that recorded some of the most historic footage in modern day of a UFO. That's the case you're talking about. It's an important case for the audience to know, because it's one of these corroborative cases that points to a bigger picture.
So I've seen it. It's wild. Anybody can find it. I'm actually looking at it right now. Now, one thing, you mentioned hypersonic technology. Now, hypersonic technology has been...
Beyond hypersonic technology.
Beyond hypersonic. Well, do me a favor. Tell me, what's the difference between hypersonic and beyond hypersonic?
Okay, so the thing that people aren't talking about is these aren't just objects moving extremely fast through the air, right? We have objects that will sit stationary, and their endurance is unmatchable. We've never seen endurance like this. In high winds, they'll sit there. And this is something that on the East Coast, pilots are encountering. This is something like you've seen the very famous. There's three videos, Tic Tac, Go Fast, and what was the third one? Tic Tac, Go Fast, and I don't remember the name of the third one right now. Been a long day. But those three videos were confirmed by the Pentagon, and they were put out December 2017 when the New York Times made their article, right? So the gimbal video, you see something self-rotating against the wind, and you hear the pilots, and you're a pilot. You know when things are impressive. You can hear what they're saying. There's a fleet of them. Look at the ASA. It's going against the wind. So if you just listen to that and look at that, you can see that these machines – from unknown origin. They are not black projects within the US. There are protocols for that. When Commander Underwood filmed the Tic Tac, if it was a black project that he filmed, he would have been given protocols, as he had been given before, to back off, to not talk about it, to sign an NDA. He didn't. So these machines are displaying capabilities that are beyond next generation technology, from their endurance to their propulsion with no plumes, no heat, no exhaust, no control surfaces, tails, fins, nothing. And they're being picked up on these integrated thermal camera systems that really integrate a number of different types of data systems. Now, again, it's not just pilots saying it. It's not just their FLIR footage looking at it. We have other sensor data. Like, I released radar data recently. First time the world's ever seen that corroborated with FLIR data. I released that. It's all unclassified. It's no problem. I checked it with the Pentagon first. I'm just saying that there are so many different layers of reporting going on. It's no longer people standing out in the open looking up into the sky. We're talking about highly advanced war technology that is being able to target and track and identify that there are unidentifieds without transponders all over our airspace. And then they can target in, go film it. And that's what you're seeing today.
Can you explain to folks, you mentioned, I think, black projects, or what did you say, black ops,
black projects.
Black projects, right, like Area 51 or something like that. I mean, we have this Area 51. It's a real thing. The Air Force, I think, runs it. And the idea...
Yeah,
and
you admitted it now.
You've addressed this already, but do me a favor, maybe in layman's terms or whatever, but
yeah.
The Area 51 is where, like, high-speed, very ultra-secret stuff takes place and development. The stealth bomber, I think, initially, they were working on it there. Who's to say that this is not... I know you already addressed this, but if you could again, that this is not secret within a secret. It's not like, you know, just a secret even within the United States government. We do have technologies, I think, that most people in the military don't even know about. Who's to say that this is definitely not that?
Right. So look, that's the New York Times covered that just yesterday, that the report that's coming out is going to acknowledge that these are not U.S. black budget programs or black programs. Let me just explain that, as you said, in layman terms. So, you know, there is a budget you can calculate within Congress, and it's a black budget. And it actually shows you, you know, what is unaccounted for as far as definition of what money is spent on. This, you can go calculate it. You go to the Library of Congress and go ahead. I mean, you can go calculate it. I've done that. So here's the deal. There are unacknowledged special access programs that deal with aerospace and all of this. And that is true, and great technology. I mean, look, America has the most developed and just furiously amazing type of defense systems and technologies. You know, we are pretty great. So what we're seeing, though, is we're seeing objects, craft, that outpace, outmaneuver, and outperform anything that has ever been displayed in the theater of war by any nation, as well as anything we have in our inventory, black project or not, acknowledged or not. And you're seeing this chatter between intelligence agencies saying, whose are these? Who's flying these?
How fast is this thing going? In the lieutenant commander's video, do we know how fast? Is there a speed, an airspeed?
Right, so we're kind of jumping around a little bit. We didn't finish up on Area 51, but the idea of airspeed, you'll be interested in that, right? This is so bizarre. These things were clocked coming in from above 80,000 feet and coming down to surface level of the water within less than a second and a half. Now, it is noted that one of the directors of national intelligence and individuals was talking about these moving at hypersonic speeds without sonic booms, right? So that's a very important clue that this technology is so important with the speed that we're seeing. So these things are coming in from above 80,000 feet to sea level in less than a second and a half. Just so happens that we're tracking it on the SPY-1 radar. SPY-1 radar, the scan volume at the top is 80,000 feet. So these things are probably coming in from much higher than 80,000 feet down to sea level in less than a second and a half. And also, we don't know it's a second and a half. That's just when the radar picked it up. It could be instantaneously. So when we're talking about speed, we have to be careful, because speed is something through reactionary propulsion. Push something out the back and you go forward. From rockets to roller skates, that's all reactionary propulsion. These systems appear to be generating what we call propulsion in a way that is so unique and advanced that it does not seem to be a reactionary propulsion system. Like Commander David Fravor said, there it was. It noticed him, the tic-tac UFO. It noticed him. It mirrored his flight pattern as he was descending in a spiral towards it. And then it shot across the 12 o'clock at him. And when it came right by his cockpit like that, it's gone instantly. And it was picked up on radar 60 miles away instantaneously.
So I mentioned it. To me, it's related, because I was just wondering, and I'm trying to build a kind of a silly case in my own head that this could be a government project in that. That's why I wanted to know how fast. So it's going incredibly
Look, man,
fast.
I hope. Wouldn't that be great? I hope, except the problem is they're already admitting within this report by the UAPTF that's going to come out. We got a little peek into it from a leak. The public did, through the New York Times. The problem is, man, these technologies, game-changing technologies, I wish they were ours. I do. It is confirmed that they are not. They are not U.S. technologies. And by the way, other countries also have programs looking at these UAPs, unidentified aerial phenomena, such as China. They're not theirs either.
So just on that, I have been very frustrated for a long time that aviation technology, when you think about it, has not advanced in the past 50 years in a lot of ways, in some fundamental ways. I mean, we kind of plateaued a long time ago. We went very far, very fast, from 1903 to about the mid-1960s. I mean, we don't have supersonic transport passenger jets anymore. I mean, it's still the ultra, you know, sophisticated airplanes of today are like 20% more fuel efficient than they were 50 years ago. It's not that impressive to me. And it's been my hope that it wasn't my hope. It was just my frustration. But it didn't even make sense that we would have gone so far, so fast, from 1903, then to the moon, and now we're in a place where we can't even get our own astronauts into deep space. And like, what the hell happened here? If we had stayed on the trajectory we were on, say from 1903, and it just kept going and going and going, would we be in a place like this? Doesn't it in a kind of a certain way, you know, humor me for a moment, that we would be here if we had remained serious about it?
I share your enthusiasm. I would like that to be true, Greg. I would like it to be true. However, as we see adoption of different types of propulsion and low observability, and just as you said, little increases, less fuel, longer distance, more aerodynamic understanding, really the incremental differences is very small. Now, it's sad. I mean, I would like to believe, but maybe there's fundamental limitations to the physics of reactionary propulsion, and we have to move outside of that. You know, like people have been trying to do with ionization propulsion, you know, solar sails, that kind of thing out in space, right? So the technology that we are working with might have fundamental limitations because of the physics involved. However, the physics involved can expand beyond if we change our methods of propulsion. That is what people believe is happening in these vehicles they're observing. The problem is there's no flag on these ships. Whose are they?
Where are you from originally?
Born and raised in Los Angeles, Santa Monica, California.
Where did you go to college?
UC Santa Cruz, actually.
What was your major?
I designed a major. It's called quantum studies.
Oh my God. You're brilliant.
I've never been asked these things. Yeah. I was a mixed martial athlete my whole life, Greg. I went up to Santa Cruz because they had a dojo that I could use and develop my kind of army of warriors. You know, I did jujitsu. That's what I did my whole life. But I was always interested in astrophysics. I was interested in quantum physics. I was interested in psychology. So I kind of blended everything together in, you know, my own major, because you could do that at a hippie school like Santa Cruz. It was great. I had great mentors.
And your parents, your family?
My dad came over when he was 6 years old from England, but my mom was born and raised in Santa Monica.
So what was your first job after college? I mean, you stayed in mixed martial arts or what?
I've worked my entire life since I was a kid. You know, I started, my family had an import-export business and I was polishing silver at 6 years old, but I slowly decided that was not my fate. And so I started teaching martial arts when I was 17 years old. I built schools all around the United States and outward, and then essentially just ran my programs both in juvenile hall systems as well as training, like, you know, Sinaloa and SWAT. So I went abroad and would teach, you know, different hand-to-hand combat techniques. And so I did that my entire life.
Wow. And I'm sorry, you said you taught that in juvenile halls?
Yeah. I ran a juvenile hall program for about 10 years where I would take at-risk youth and give them a chance to have free jiu-jitsu training for the rest of their life if they could finish the program that I had in the juvenile hall system. And many did and continued training.
That's fantastic. By the way, just what is the benefit? Is it a discipline? Is it to defend yourself? What is the big takeaway, or all of the above? It's just what's
from
it all about?
From martial arts or from jiu-jitsu even? You know, look, I think it's different for the person. It's like, you know, how empty is your hand? You know, what I grasped from it is that it taught me a way of life. It taught me the consciousness of the warrior. It taught me to apply myself wholeheartedly without any reserve if I find something of worth. So for me, it taught me self-restraint, control. It also showed me tactically how to apply myself in disadvantaged, you know, positions, being a smaller person, being fighting a bigger person, where there's no talk. It either works or it doesn't work. If you have better technique, you will be formidable. You will win. And so it taught me that. Martial arts taught me a way of life. And for me, that's what I got from it. But some people get very different things from it.
Before the last couple of years, what was the biggest discovery? What was the most important discovery for those who are looking at unidentified flying objects? I mean, what was the big one before this sudden kind of, or sudden, but this spate?
Right. So if people have been paying attention, we have been told throughout history by aviators and by people who, you know, are credible individuals, they've seen something. Like Governor Fife Symington, when he saw in Arizona as governor, and by the way, he was a Navy pilot, right? And he saw a craft above him and above Arizona. It's called the Phoenix Lights. And at the time, because he was governor, he wanted to stop panic. And he kind of did like a public display where he tempered everybody down and kind of made humor of it. But years later came out and said, look, as an aviator, as a pilot, you know, worked for the United States Navy, I can tell you, I've never seen anything like this. It was too big, it was too silent, and it was not from here. It was otherworldly. So that kind of thing has been coming out for quite some time. If you're paying attention and you ignore the ridicule and actually look at who's telling you and who's telling you what, it should have been abundantly apparent that this was a real phenomenon, that real people were having this experience, and that these reports were important. However, it's been stigmatized to the point of ridicule. And that's what we've been noticing with media and everything. Now, that's all changed. That all changed in December of 2017, when we found out the United States government was indeed studying UFOs. There were two programs, one called AUSAP, one called ATIP. Those were identified through the New York Times article. They didn't get everything right. I'll say that. My mentor in journalism, George Knapp, he had the story way before them. He allowed them to print. He had the story right. So we've been clarifying it ever since, both of us. But that's when we found out as the American public that the United States does take UFOs seriously and has been studying and trying to back engineer the technologies that are observed by credible pilots. And when that happened, that changed the dynamic because the United States government had told the American people that we stopped studying UFOs in 1969 with the end of Project Blue Book. So now we know that was a lie. That's what we learned in December of 2017. Now, fast forward to where we are now. The American people have spoken. We've said this is important to us. We want to know for the safety of our pilots, for the safety of our nation, we want to know who is operating these vehicles, which seem to be, as I said before, beyond next generation technology. And that is what we're seeing with the Senate Intelligence Committee asking for a report, demanding legally a report from our intelligence agencies.
You mentioned that this has been stigmatized for a long time, but behind the scenes, some serious people from all walks of life have been very interested in this topic. Two people, I am told, like Richard Nixon, took it seriously, and so did Jackie Gleason. Do you know anything about those stories? Is it all nonsense, or is there something to it, or what?
No, it's not nonsense at all. There is something to it. That specific story that you're talking about was something that even Jackie Gleason's wife testified to when he came home after going out with Nixon that day. Purportedly, you know, Nixon showed him some of the bodies. He showed him the craft. And that's Jackie Gleason's kind of claim to UFO fame. Now, that's an interesting story. It's a fun story. However, there were presidents that took this very, very seriously, and they've admitted to it. Like Bill Clinton, first thing he did when he got into office was he sent Webster Hubble, and he asked them to find out what's up with UFOs, and they were denied access to information. He admits to it. So from Clinton to Reagan to Ford to a number of presidents have gone on the record saying they've either seen a UFO or they've tried to find out more and were stymied along the way.
That is so wild, because I thought that is what I would do if I were president. I would want to see the UFO, that and the Kennedy file. But then again,
I left that out. I left it out because I don't want to cross pollinate the two. But that is actually what Clinton asks: is what was up with Kennedy and what's up with the UFOs? I mean, come on, you become president, of course you want to know about that. But you know, really interesting, Greg, and you might be more savvy than me about this. So I didn't know that our presidents could be denied access to intelligence. I thought they probably had and were in a position to know, but I guess there's two sides to the coin of intelligence, and one is clearance, obviously. The other is need to know. The question is, who determines that? Because the presidents that did ask, such as Clinton, we're not told the truth about UFOs, and they know it.
That is amazing. And actually, I am only newly savvy to the idea that a president could be denied access. The deep state, the swamp, it's all real. Hey, you mentioned Mr. Knapp. He's your mentor in journalism. Is that what you said?
Yeah, correct. He has guided me through this whole process, helping me to kind of navigate the briar patch of, you know, false positives when it comes to the UFO topic, which is very, very real. And I'm grateful to him for that. He's been on this beat since 1989, when a man named Bob Lazar came forward to him and said, I worked at Area 51, a sub base called Site 4, and I was tasked with trying to reverse engineer alien spacecraft with terrestrial materials. And back then it was as wild as it sounds today. However, 35 years later, almost everything Bob Lazar said is turning up to be true. So this was kind of the beginning of why Area 51 is on your tongue, why it's a household name, its association with exotic technologies. Because we did great things at Area 51, from the SR-71, stealth fighters. I mean, we did great stuff and continue to do great stuff in secrecy there as a location that is strategic. However, that concept that we are exploiting technologies that are more foreign than another nation, that is something that the evidence continues to build for. And that started with George Knapp and Bob Lazar. That's how I got hooked on this propulsion question when it comes to non-terrestrial technologies.
You haven't wondered too much about where this stuff is coming from. I mean, like in terms of the greater philosophical question, I mean, of life on another planet, or I'm sorry, in another galaxy or anything like that. That's not your thrust, is it?
It's not my personal thrust. However, you have to have not a single bone of curiosity in your body. If you've ever gone camping, you put out your fire, you look up to the night sky, and you see just the stars everywhere. And you can imagine those are suns, and most of them have orbiting planets, many in the Goldilocks zone, where it would be habitable to life as we know it. How can you not look at the vast universe, just what we can see with the human eye, not even mentioning night vision, which, you know, amplifies that spectacularly, to see many more suns than there is darkness in the sky? How can you not look up and ask the question? Clearly, we're not alone in the universe. That's hubris beyond imagination. The question is, have any of them had a chance to develop technologically with propulsion? So getting here would be really easy.
So there are probably some questions I'm not asking you that I should be asking you. And what are they? What is your biggest frustration right now about the public conversation? Or is this all gravy? Is this all exactly where we're supposed to be as a public?
I love how you almost asked the most important question in the room ever, which is, what did I not ask you that's important?
Yeah. Right?
I always, always ask that question.
I was going to get back to that, but I wanted to not put it out there. But I do feel inadequate when it comes to this, but I'll come back to that. So really, what should I be asking you that I'm not?
Okay, but you know, what this should be an ongoing dialogue, right? This is not something we can wrap our heads around, me neither, like in one conversation. This is the conversation you and I are having, is the conversation that America should be having. This is a conversation that requires and begs us to think about, you know, greater concepts. Like, let's determine where these things are from. I mean, I can tell you the crazy, wild theories. If they're not the U.S. and they're not Russia and they're not China, where are these coming from? I mean, there are some pretty wild theories, and that's not my forte, but I'll list a few for you. You know, some people ask, is this extraterrestrial? Is this from another star system? You know, look, we have to first exclude, you know, U.S. military. Let's exclude a foreign adversarial nation's military. But let's say we exclude those. Okay, so then on the table remains also this idea of extraterrestrial. So from another star system, extratemporal, that's an interesting one, from another time, the idea of dimensional travel, right? And then look, there's this wild idea called ultra-terrestrial. And this is the idea that these are just machines from somebody that's been here just as long as us, if not before, and we're just starting to meet them. So all of these things, again, Greg, I'm going to bring this back down to earth, right? These are not my forte. I'll leave that to the philosophers and you know, individuals in life more prepared to answer those existential questions than I am. I'm a mechanics kind of guy. I'm a nuts and bolts kind of guy. So what I see is a mystery, uncharted and unmapped territory. That to me is exciting. No matter how you slice it, there are machines that fly in our airspace with impunity globally. And those machines do not have a flag on them. I want to know.
Wow. Where could people go? Where should people go? Where is the best source? What is the best source for people who want to get smart on this stuff?
Right. Well, open your eyes and open your ears, first of all. It's everywhere. You can't escape it. But signal to noise, you know, that's a problem, discerning that. Obviously, I have a website, extraordinarybeliefs.com, and people can go see my work there. But really, I do all of my drops. My recent Pentagon-confirmed UFO video drops have all been on my Instagram, Greg. Believe that or not, that is the most powerful news form for me as an individual journalist, as a civilian journalist. So I would say go to my social media. I would also say everybody should go look at, as we talked about before, George Knapp. He's got something called Mystery Wire, mysterywire.com. And as a news reporter for over 35 years, he's collected one of the greatest and most vast and kind of just one of the most dependable archives about this mystery. So those are the places I would direct your audience to. Obviously, I have movies on Netflix and on Hulu, and those are cool and people can watch them. But I would just say pay attention. Pay attention to the news. Pay attention and read between the lines and listen to what people are saying and don't have a stigma yourself, because we're not that bright. We need to listen and look right now about what's going on.
He's a great guy. I didn't even scratch the surface. That's on me. That's my fault. He was so patient with me. This is a big, big, big topic that is somewhat new to me, even though I was flying for a long time. I never saw a UFO with my own eyes. I did fly off the coast of San Diego quite a bit. I fired a Sidewinder missile not too far from San Diego. Got to San Diego, hung a left, went south, and there's a big restricted area there, and that's when we fired those missiles, and it's pretty cool. Anyway, to be continued, and you'll be seeing Jeremy on the Newsmax show soon, @GregKellyUSA on Twitter. Many, many thanks, everyone. Take care.